In Sri Lanka, a tropical island nation just a few miles southeast of India, children never get a snow day. Neither do they have to contend with earthquakes, volcanoes, or sandstorms. But 3 million of its students now face a different kind of disaster. Their schools can't afford ink, or even paper on which to print it. On March 19th, the education department of its largest province announced the cancellation of all exams for grades 9, 10, and 11 for that exact reason. Today, however, paper is the least of its concerns, as entire cities grind, as we speak, to a dangerous and unprecedented halt. Prices for essential goods, everything from rice to fuel to medicine, have doubled, then tripled, and continued rising. That, combined with power outages lasting up to 15 hours a day, have Christian nuns, Hindus, Muslims, and Buddhist monks, who just 10 years ago fought each other in a civil war, all joining hands on the streets in protest. Unfortunately, the worst is likely yet to come. As the last remaining supplies dwindle away, the current 9 hours of electricity and severely overpriced groceries may soon be remembered as the good days. And yet, Sri Lanka, experts warn, is just the tip of the iceberg. Though unique as a country, the roots of many of its current problems are far too common. The United Nations warned last month of a perfect storm brewing in the developing world. One expected to leave, quote, deep and long-lasting scars. Sri Lanka, in other words, may simply be the first domino to fall this year. And understanding how it got here, unable to afford even paper, may offer a preview of what comes next. Sponsored by Storyblocks, where you can find over 1 million high-quality videos for your creative projects, business, or like us, YouTube channel. This is an imaginary country. If it imports more things than it exports, we say it has a trade deficit. Conversely, if it exports more than it imports, it has a trade surplus. Now, because our frame of reference is personal finance, in which you're told to spend less than you save, or corporations, where profit sounds a lot like a surplus of money, it's tempting to see deficits as a bad thing. Of course, as you may already know, it's much more complicated. The United States, for instance, has a huge deficit. The slower-growing Japanese economy, meanwhile, has a giant surplus. But what's all too easy to forget is that the US, and to a lesser extent Japan, are weird countries. China may win the trade war with the US, for example, but what does it do with all that money? Invest in the United States. But remember, this is a very unique set of circumstances. It's what economists mean when they say the US has a privileged position. When China sells things to America, it wants to buy, with that money, US dollars, not Somali shillings or Iraqi dinars. Or Sri Lankan rupees. To see why this is an issue for a country like Sri Lanka, stop thinking in terms of imports versus exports. And for the sake of simplicity, think instead about the actual physical supply of dollars. When it buys, say, milk from next door India, it generally pays for those goods with US dollars, because that's what India wants. Likewise, when Sri Lanka sells its tea to the UK, the British pay it in dollars. You should start noticing two potential problems here. First, if a country imports more than it exports, you can see how it could just run out of USD. It would be effectively spending more than it's saving. And second, running out of USD is problematic because it's what you need to buy imports. In other words, for countries not named the United States of America, this balance of payments really is important. Here, where a negative value equals a trade deficit, you can see that Sri Lanka has been in the red, so to speak, for quite some time. It imports a huge amount of rice, wheat, sugar, and medicine, not to mention all its oil. Now, all this might sound like trade deficits are some horrible, no good, very bad thing. But as you can see here, most countries run deficits. There's nothing rare or necessarily catastrophic about having a negative balance of trade on its own. What all these countries do to make up the difference is simply borrow. If that sounds unsustainable, well, yes and no. In the case of Sri Lanka, its government has a long history of gross mismanagement. Just last year, for example, the government banned the import of all chemical fertilizers in a bid to become the world's first all-organic nation. To the surprise of no one but the president, crop yields were immediately cut in half. You could make a pretty good case that Sri Lanka was destined for a crisis of some kind and that it was only a matter of when. Yet, just a few short years ago, the country showed real economic promise. It had other ways of getting its hands on dollars. In 2019, tourism accounted for 22% of its total GDP. Lonely Planet ranked the country the number one best place to visit that same year. There are beautiful beaches, wild leopards, yoga retreats, and stunning natural landscapes. Another source of foreign exchange was remittances. Workers would go overseas, earn foreign currency, and send it to their families back home. But you can probably guess what happened in 2020. Tourism effectively fell to zero overnight. Actually, the decline in tourists began even before the pandemic. In the spring of 2019, terrorists bombed a string of churches and hotels across the capital, Colombo. The tragic and shocking death of 269 people, at least 45 of which were foreign nationals, led to a 70% drop in tourist arrivals. Its $7.9 billion of foreign reserves in 2019 fell to just $1.6 billion by 2021. And if that sounds bad, there's an extra reason on top of the normal badness that makes it even worse. You may have heard that some countries intentionally under or overvalue their currencies. Sri Lanka is one of those places. Let's say a bag of rice from India costs 1 USD to import, and 1 USD is currently worth 200 Sri Lankan rupees. If Sri Lanka can convince everyone that no, actually 150 rupees is the value of a US dollar, well, now that rice is effectively 25% cheaper. The central bank, in other words, overvalued the rupee because the country depends so heavily on imports. By keeping staple goods affordable, authorities in developing nations maintain economic, and therefore political, stability. If you're wondering why all countries don't do this, the answer is what Sri Lanka is going through now. Actually maintaining that artificial exchange rate involves buying and selling, or borrowing, foreign currency, which, remember, Sri Lanka is running out of. Here you can see where the central bank kept the rupee at roughly the same value until it suddenly couldn't, when its real market value took over. The government, meanwhile, was still pretending that 1 USD was worth, for example, 150 rupees, when everyone else had decided it was worth 200. Here's what that means in practice. Walk into a bank, hand them 1 USD, and they'll give you back 150 rupees. Walk, on the other hand, into a private shop, hand them that same dollar bill, and they'll give you, say, 200. It doesn't take long before word gets out, don't deposit your foreign currency in the bank, it's a scam. Migrant workers quickly learn not to send their remittances home through official channels. Because of this, the central bank has even less foreign currency, making it even harder to maintain its fake exchange rate. And this is when things get really ugly, really fast. What Sri Lanka is experiencing now are the effects of three interconnected problems. First, because the country is running out of dollars, it can't buy enough imports to keep up with demand, meaning there just isn't enough rice, paper, or fuel to go around. Second, at the same time, people's savings are suddenly worth far less today than they were yesterday. Years of hard work, gone overnight. And third, not only is the rupee rapidly depreciating in value, but no one knows where exactly the bottom is. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to see the trend. Last week I could afford a dozen bananas, today half as many. Every rational household starts stocking up on essential goods, leading to chaos, confusion, and chronic undersupply. Lines at gas stations were so long that two men collapsed and died waiting. Needless to say, the pandemic plus poor governance had placed the country on tenuous ground already. Then the war in Ukraine began. The conflict and the subsequent sanctions are currently causing the largest commodity shock in half a century. Here you can see, for instance, the price, and just as importantly, its volatility, of wheat and maize, which Russia and Ukraine produce 28 and 15% of the global supply of, respectively. Ukrainian exports alone previously fed 400 million people. Some countries get nearly all their wheat from one or both. These are just the places which source at least 80% of their wheat from Russia and Ukraine. On top of this, Russia also supplies 15% of the world's fertilizer, and just as importantly, the fuel used to make fertilizer. If you drive a car and live on planet Earth, you probably don't need to be told that oil prices are off the charts. Many countries have or will react by banning food exports, further exacerbating the situation for net importers like Sri Lanka. Now, like trade deficits, developing countries being unable to pay back their loans is not all that uncommon. There's a system for this sort of thing, the equivalent of bankruptcy for nations. Normally, organizations like the IMF and World Bank step in. Sri Lanka last received a bailout from the IMF for $1.6 billion in 2016. But this time is different. Bailouts, you see, are conditional on things like having a functional government and implementing economic policies which are often unpopular. The IMF doesn't just write checks on a whim. It wants to know that the country won't end up in the same situation 6 months later. These are conditions Sri Lanka simply can't meet. While citizens are very justifiably angry at their government, the unfortunate truth is that political turmoil and social unrest will likely only discourage foreign assistance. Protesters are right that the country's economic woes didn't come from nowhere. The groundwork for the current crisis can be traced back decades, when Sri Lanka began paying off old loans with new ones, in what the World Bank has compared to a pyramid scheme. While it's easy to connect the dots between an unprecedented global pandemic and a sudden economic collapse, so too is it easy to blame Chinese loans. But neither theory captures the whole truth. Only about 10% of Sri Lanka's debt is owned by China, and its leaders have been pursuing disastrous policies for years before any of the recent events. In 2019, it cut taxes precisely when it needed public revenue the most. Poor governance is not the only, but it is an important ingredient to the cocktail of calamities it's dealing with now. What's surprising is not Sri Lanka's poor leadership, but how quickly it all unraveled. In a matter of weeks, millions of Sri Lankans went from living a fairly middle-class lifestyle, cars, college education, and leisure, to wondering whether they can eat dinner. This is how countries spiral out of control. A shock, or in this case, a trifecta of shocks, exposes a nation's weak governance. From there, there's no limit to how bad things can get. For which other country or countries will the confluence of the pandemic, financial tightening, and a drastic increase in commodity prices soon expose a weak foundation? When the Fed raises interest rates, as it's doing now, developing countries have a harder time paying off their loans. This requires that they choose between servicing their debt or spending what little money they have saving lives at home. Some experts are pointing to Pakistan, whose currency is currently in rapid decline, as a possible next domino to fall. This domino, however, is nuclear. The war alone is expected to decrease global GDP growth by 1% this year. Put simply, a global pandemic, a change in interest rates, and the largest armed conflict in Europe since the Cold War would each, by themselves, be hugely significant. But all three at the same time? That's why the UN calls this a perfect storm. Here you can see the last 15 years of agriculture, commodity, and grain prices. While high prices don't guarantee social unrest, they tend to correlate. This, for example, is the Arab Spring. This, meanwhile, is where prices were before the war in Ukraine. This is where they're at now. What for the rich world will be an inconvenience, high gas prices, inefficient supply chains, and possibly even recession, will, for the developing world, mean the undoing of decades worth of progress in healthcare, education, and general prosperity. Now, you may be wondering why Sri Lanka has been the focus of this video when this is really a global issue. The reason is simple. What's happening in Sri Lanka is tragic, visible, and all too real, which makes it a useful way of humanizing what are ultimately numbers on a graph. And that's why I love Storyblocks. Video, in my opinion, is the most compelling method of storytelling. Many of the clips you saw in this video, including the ones you see on screen now, were sourced from Storyblocks' collection of over a million clips. We found 28 pages of video from Sri Lanka alone. What I love about YouTube is that it reduces the barriers to creativity. Anyone can tell a compelling story. Storyblocks, likewise, does that for video clips. Most stock video costs $50, $75, $100 per clip. Storyblocks costs a fraction of that and gives you access to unlimited downloads of its entire collection. I just checked my email and confirmed that I've been using Storyblocks now for 4 years. I was already recommending it before they became a sponsor. So whether you're a solo entrepreneur, an aspiring filmmaker, YouTuber, or business professional, Storyblocks is the go-to resource for quick, easy-to-find, and high-quality video. Click the link on screen now or in the description and sign up for their unlimited all-access plan today.